Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Roy Petty. I'm from Rogers, Arkansas, and I'm representing the petitioners in this matter. When Esma Juarez first applied for asylum after she fled Guatemala, the Guatemalan War was still raging, an iron curtain still divided Europe, and the Soviet Union was the evil empire. When her application was finally adjudicated, the Civil War had long ago ended, and both the Iron Curtain and the Soviet Union were distant memories. So after putting her case on hold for so long, 16 years altogether, why was the government in such a rush to order Esma and her son deported? That's the petitioner's basic question. They did fail to meet...
What legal significance that might have?
I think the significance plays into the extent to which what due process considerations ought to be weighed in determining what their how their case should have been treated.
I'm lost. I think we need to start with jurisdiction.
Okay.
INS contends that the court lacks jurisdiction here, and you didn't file a reply brief, which is the usual way of dealing with such a contention, so I wish you would deal with it now.
Okay. I think that the jurisdiction arises under, well, first of all, there is an asylum claim pending, and both for Esma and her son, and Esma's been pending for 16 years, 17. In addition, the cancellation and removal application that she filed, I think these issues fall under the ambit of Subban versus Ashcroft, which is cited in our briefs, and the issue is...
Actually, as you may remember from the L.E. case, which government relies on and you don't discuss, Subban is a case where a continuance, that is, the delay, was the relief sought in the case in order to allow time for the alien relative, for the immediate relative visa. Does not look like a continuance is the relief sought. The relief sought here is asylum. And actually, as far as I can tell, your client didn't properly seek a continuance. What your client sought was an excuse for not having met a deadline. Sorry, your two clients. That's not a continuance at all. It's just, I missed the deadline. Please excuse it. It's not... You know, please extend the hearing to some future time.
Well, what they sought
What is the source of our jurisdiction to entertain a claim for what is surely a discretionary decision by the immigration judge whether to excuse noncompliance with a deadline?
What the petitioner sought was a continuance, or in the alternative, they could go. The judge could clearly go forward on the asylum application. And just reserve judgment until later when the biometrics clearances have been made.
But you need to discuss our cases. We have held, in the wake of Ali, that that there is no jurisdiction in this court to entertain a claim that the immigration judge should have excused, as a discretionary matter, excused noncompliance with a deadline. We have, in fact, several cases that have held that. Now, if there's some reason why this case is different, you really need to tell us.
Well, I guess my main concern is that is the arbitrariness of having had to wait so long for the case to be heard and then suddenly to seeking a brief amount of time to go forward. They had filed everything that was required to be filed. They had filed for their fingerprints and simply hadn't gotten a receipt notice back and a notice for them to take their prints as of the date of the hearing.
Your kind of general equitable argument. I'm asking a question about jurisdiction. We can't get to your general equitable argument unless we have subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, I would still argue that the case law addresses is in the door closing statute is the notion that that statute was intended to do was to prevent the federal courts from reviewing discretionary decisions as to the grant or denial of relief for certain kinds of applications, that Congress decided that in every matter but asylum, that...
Well, if that's your argument, you're just asking us to overrule Ali, because Ali considered and rejected that argument.
Well, I'm not sure that they did. It seems to me that they left the situation available where there were where a case was mishandled in a way that really trampled on applicants' ability to argue their case or go forward with their case in circumstances such as this. There were alternatives. There were certainly less harsh alternatives available to the court.
I just don't understand what that has to do with jurisdiction. Right? We not only Ali, but there's also Jimenez-Veracacha, which says, I mean, that's the case that has the holding that a request for discretionary relief from a deadline is not within our jurisdiction. Now, that seems to be exactly what your client wants. So it looks to me like Jimenez-Veracacha is right on point. And if all you can say in response is, yes, but equities favor my client, it's not a response.
Well, I guess we, if in view of that, I have to say that we filed the petition for review after having looked at all, considered all the facts in her case, and determined that it seemed terribly unfair that she should not get a chance to present her case.
But see, the problem is there's not a. If there were a terribly unfair case, you would have a winner.
Yes.
There is no such case, and what I'm really concerned about. Because I don't think we have jurisdiction, and I don't think you can convince me otherwise. But the fact that, you know, you were before, because you were the lawyer that represented her.
Yes.
Yeah. So July 26th of 05, the immigration judge says, get the fingerprints, tells her to bug you about getting the fingerprints. Then you make a motion more than 16 months later because nothing has been done on the fingerprints. You know, you talk about FedEx. I mean... And these people, as I understand it, were in the country for almost 20 years. She had two children born here, and because the fingerprints, I mean, I don't understand how this even happened.
Well, I can say that my client population can be challenging to deal with. And I can't offer a good, clever excuse as to why they didn't meet that deadline. They didn't meet it. We're not going to pretend that they had a compelling reason to do so. They did finally, after much effort on our part, cooperate, and we did actually file the paperwork. And I guess the level of outrage that led me to file a petition for review was the notion of, after all of these years, that the government would suddenly be sticklers about deadlines in a case where I understand the need to follow rules and the need to get fingerprints taken, although in these matters I'm not sure what that proves, but that the harm that befell the petitioners because of that failure to follow the rules is a strong one indeed, that the harm to them is very great. Not just to the petitioner and her older son, but to her younger son, who's a U.S. citizen, and faces the choice of either losing his mother or losing his country. And it seemed to me that, yes, I regret to have to say it's an equitable test, is that what was this fair to them to have them not being granted a brief period to... meet the fingerprint requirements, or at least gone forward on the application and reserve judgment until the fingerprints had cleared. I think that's all the time I've got. Are there other questions? Or?
Thank you, Mr. Petty.
Thank you,
Ms. Schwartz.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Nora Oscarly Schwartz for Respondent Michael Mukasey. This case is about the discretionary, if there's jurisdiction to review the discretionary decision of the immigration tribunals.
One non-discretionary issue here, one legal issue that's preserved by the Real ID Act, the question whether the regulation requiring fingerprints is valid. That's a pure question of law. It's within the scope of the Real ID Act, and I understand Mr. Petty's brief to contest the validity of the regulation. Perhaps that deserves some discussion.
Well, it might in other circumstances, but in this case it doesn't, because that was not outcome determinative. It wasn't failure just to do the biometrics. It was failure to provide fingerprints, which had always been a regulation, and which had never been objected to. Moreover, he did not preserve the issue because at the hearing he made no objection to providing fingerprints, biometrics, or applications by a certain deadline.
Well, I gather your position is they didn't raise this before the board either.
Well, exactly.
Okay.
So there's no, and although you can't challenge, raise a constitutional issue for resolution before the board, I mean, there was no preparation for this. There was no way for the board to answer and say biometrics are okay because. And again, but that goes even further back to the hearing itself, where he never said, gee, I don't think biometrics are required. But the point is, it wasn't denied for lack of biometrics. It was denied for lack of fingerprints. And there's no objection to fingerprints, and also failure to submit the applications in the time that was allotted. This case is covered, and there's no other reason to take jurisdiction over the issue. There's no basis legally. And again, his argument is all equity, but there is no harm to petitioners. They had a year and a half to file their applications and their biometrics. A year and a half later, they show up without even evidence that it's been sought, filed, prepared, no FedEx receipts, just, oh, gee, and the motion for continuance said, oh, I didn't have time in the last 2 or 3 weeks. What about time in the last 16 months? We don't know if it was a strategic decision. Well, if we ignore it, maybe we can buy more time. But if you look at the underlying applications, there's no eligibility for asylum because it's based on a fear of crime. Moreover, the eligibility for asylum is questionable because there's no evidence that his mother ever included him in an application. As we point out in footnote on page 10, the principal can only include derivative applicants if they are in the country at the time. He did not enter until 1997, so he was not part of her 1990 application, and there's no evidence that a subsequent application was filed. So he's probably not even eligible to apply for asylum because he's way beyond the 1 year of application. As far as we know, he hasn't even filed one yet, and he's been here since 1997. Moreover, the references to Nicara, at some points they argue, well, her Nicara application was denied, but the point is she was never eligible, which they conceded other points because she didn't file her asylum application in time to qualify and didn't register under ABC, which was the alternate means for qualifying. So what we have here is just, it is a long time in this country, but there's a benefit. The war is over. There's no fear of guerrillas anymore in Guatemala. And the negative is that you've made a life for yourself here, it doesn't bestow any rights, even if there were jurisdiction. But flat out,
as I understand it, they were warned on the record, and I guess they were present, or she was at least present, that, there was an explicit warning that their request wouldn't be granted if they were not fingerprinted before the next hearing, and a suggestion that they pester their attorney to have them fingerprinted. That was all in the record.
Both of them were warned, not only warned, but they were handed the application forms. They could have sent it in themselves. So there really is no basis in law or jurisdiction to consider the arguments petitioners make in this case. If there are no further questions, the government will submit.
Thank you, Ms. Schwartz. Anything further, Mr. Petty?
If I may. With regard to Edgar, the son, he was added later as a derivative. The administrative record is lacking a lot of things. Unfortunately, one of them is the evidence that they did that, but he clearly had a work permit as an asylum applicant for a number of years.
And even this FedEx problem you say you had, you didn't present anything to the court, did you? To the immigration judge?
Except at the close of the record, the judge acknowledged that he had now received that application for cancellation of removal. But, of course, the asylum application was long in the file. But
the issue you made reference to, you had this FedEx problem. But there was nothing in the record indicating that you had written your clients or spoken with them or tried to get them to get the fingerprints in.
Well, I'm averse to trying to blame things on my clients. I mean, I'm the attorney of record, and it was my challenge to get that up there. They've had their fingerprints taken many times over the years. Every time they get a new work permit, they've got to get their fingerprints taken. The biometrics regulations, which were relatively new, prior to that, the practice...
The agency says the new biometrics regulation is irrelevant. It's not in the chain of causation, so... Who cares?
Well, that's not what the judge said. And in the past, what's happened is...
Do you agree with the agency that the fingerprint requirement is an old one?
I do, and what's been the practice in the past has been that...
That's all I needed to hear. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Petty.
Okay, thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.